My name's John, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here amongst you this morning, but for the grace of God. And I'm a member of the Hoyoke Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Thursday and Sunday evening at the Hoyoke Geriatric Center in Hoyoke, Massachusetts. And you're all welcome there. Just because it's at the Geriatric Center doesn't mean that you have to be old to attend. And we hope to see you all there that are leaving Canada tomorrow night on your way home. I'd like to start... first of all, I need to remind the attendees that special needs seating, if anybody comes in that has special needs, please make sure that they have room someplace over here for that. Now I'd like to ask for a moment of silent gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 70 years. And I should mention that this is the meaning of anonymity at the public level, so hopefully you're in the right room. And what I'm going to do is just announce the speakers and let them go get ahead. I was taught that chair people chair and speakers speak. So the first person I'd like to introduce is Chuck.
Well, that took 2 minutes to get here to there. We're trying to figure out how much time this is going to take this morning. Chuck Rice, I'm an alcoholic. The only qualification I have for participating in this meeting is that I am an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I do have a sobriety date. Some speakers have said theirs and others have not. I don't know what the policy is, but mine is February the 16th, 1970, and I'm forever grateful. I've been careful not to instill my personal opinion on my presentations. However, I want to clarify that if I have, it's my opinion only, and not those of Alcoholics Anonymous or our General Service Office. Before I begin, I want to take the time to dedicate my part in this morning's program to Bill Archer, who during the 2000 International Convention, held in Minneapolis 5 years ago, was our GSO staff member who oversaw the public information desk at our General Service Office. Thank you, Bill. I know your spirit is in this room and throughout this convention this weekend. He's a wonderful guy and left us much too early at around age 50. Served as a delegate in Montreal, eventually at our General Service Office as a staff member. So I want to thank our General Service Office for their loving invitation to share on the topic of anonymity at the public level. Having been invited to give a presentation so important for our fellowship's survival, I've written my thoughts and comments on paper to help guide my sharing during our session this morning. And looking at the early history of anonymity in the public media, although there were a few others, one can look no further than the Jack Alexander article that ran in the Saturday Evening Post in March of 1941. Most of AA's early growth came shortly after the Post article entered the living rooms of the American public. Over the next 10 years, AA groups and members nearly doubled every year. When the days of Wine and Roses hit the theaters, I was 24 years old. The story left a deep impression on me. To my knowledge, that was the first time I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous publicly. If you bought one of those little souvenir booklets, it even talks about the part that AA played in the development of that movie. So it is not uncommon today to watch a television series that find that some of the fictional characters are sober members of AA, and in that sense, Alcoholics Anonymous is no longer hidden from the general public. Some of you may have heard on radio and television the AA public service announcements distributed and made available from our PI desk at our General Service Office. Many of our members say that this effort is breaking AA's anonymity. I'm often reminded that we are not a secret society. We are an anonymous society. Future members of AA need to know that we exist and how to find us. On page 568, the big book, Herbert Spencer is quoted, "There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation." Anonymity, as we in AA practice it, appears at first to be fairly simple. In a 1984 grapevine, one writer described anonymity in at least five different aspects. The writer referred to it as the five gifts of anonymity. 1, personal protection. 2, representation. 3, equality. 4, humility. And 5, unity. We all know that personal protection is the doorway to freedom for every new AA member who walks into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Representation protects AA as a whole, lest we aren't careful not to instill our personal and sometimes misguided ideas at the public level, which could keep a door closed for a future member. Equality is one of my favorites. It describes each of us as being equals. In other words, there's no big or little AA member. Essentially, we are all the same. Unity in AA becomes a recipient based on the concept of anonymity. Unity is the precious gift of anonymity that we have been given through the force of necessity and self-sacrifice. We can now see that anonymity creates a foundation for individual and fellowship integrity. In the past number of years, I've had my own experience with anonymity at the public level, more specifically in the public media. 25 years ago, I was invited to participate on an evening radio talk show with another woman in AA where we only used our first names and talked about our own recoveries in Alcoholics Anonymous, along with what AA is and what AA is not. The producers of the program were very aware of the importance of our personal AA anonymity. However, I'm not sure they understood its deeper meaning for our fellowship. On air and in the beginning of the program, we made it clear that we were not spokespersons for Alcoholics Anonymous. We were merely sharing our experience, strength, and hope on how we have recovered as AA members using the AA program. A few years later, I was asked to participate on a local television station that was running a week-long morning program on staying sober over the holidays. A call came into the St. Paul Central office with a request for some sober alcoholics to be a part of the program. After considerable discussion with our area delegate and the PI desk at our general service office, another woman and I went on the program as recovered alcoholics, not as AA members. Today I would not be in a position to repeat that request should it be presented to me, as I have since become the office manager for a local intergroup service office serving the AA community in Minneapolis. Most public media requests to AA members require common sense, discussion with other members who can offer guidance. If it doesn't feel right, then it's probably not a good idea to pursue the request, no matter how well-meaning it might seem at the time. I myself have declined some public media requests that didn't seem to be within the confines of our anonymity tradition. On New Year's Eve, I was interviewed for a newscast about staying sober over New Year's. They came into the intergroup service office, camera and all, and did a shadow box, as my friend down here would say, the store, which is not true. They came into the intergroup service office, camera and all, and did a shadow box interview along with showing copies of the AA Big Book on our table. The AA Grapevine slogans were shown in the background. Neither my full name nor face appeared on the evening news of that television station. Now, generally, I don't do those requests, but I called a half a dozen guys to see if they'd be made available to do that. One is sitting right there, and he was in his car just getting off an airplane in Minneapolis, and he didn't want to do it. So they end up coming to the office. She's going, "Are you an alcoholic?" "Yeah." "We'll come there." So the volunteers and the staff got real excited. We closed the door, shut the lights off. They did the shadow box, and It was, they first went to the Al-Anon office, which was down the hall, and she called on her cell phone. She says, "No one's here." I says, "Al-Anon closes at 4. But, I didn't write that down, so. This past February, a magazine entitled The Lavender wanted to interview me about AA. The writer wanted information about local 12-step services. The publication's audience is primarily that of the gay and lesbian community. In this issue of their magazine, they included information on the best bars to visit. I suspected that one of their editors thought they should include information on Alcoholics Anonymous, where to call for help and information should some of their readers have a drinking problem. I've since found out that someone involved in that magazine is one of us. So, so up to that point, kind of my experience at the level of press, radio, and films. Now for kind of the good stuff, I feel. Anonymous constitutes half our name. Anonymity is the principle mentioned specifically in 2 of our traditions and contained conceptually in the other 10. Within the other 10. Anonymity is called the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. In the long form of Tradition 12, it states the principle of anonymity has immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This, to the end of our great blessings, never spoil us, that we should live in thankful contemplation of Him who resides over us all. Our AA fellowship did not invent anonymity, although some may think we did. Frank M., past GSO archivist, did some research on anonymity. Just what is its history and where did it start? The word itself comes from the Greek, an, A-N, meaning without, and onoma, O-N-O-M-A, means name. In other words, without name. The word is over 4,000 years old, and the principle is perhaps considerably older. In ancient Greece, as elsewhere, political pamphlets appeared that were unsigned. This technique saved the author from imprisonment or worse. An essay presented at a sharing session by a past trustee on the subject took excerpts from the Talmud, which urged upon the people of those times to recognize the danger of seeking self-greatness as opposed to the fuller satisfaction and the reward that comes from remaining one of the crowd and working with one another for the good of all. In the Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox, a book widely read by early AAs, Matthew 6 is discussed. Take heed that ye do not your alms before men to be seen of them, otherwise ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound the trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall be in secret, and thy Father will see it in secret himself and shall reward thee openly. Thus we begin to see another dimension in these examples. Continuing this evolution of anonymity in the monasteries and cloisters throughout Europe, the practice of surrendering a novitiate's own name and taking another was widespread. These moves were designed, of course, to encourage the loss of self and to facilitate service to others. Take our friend Frank A. for an example, one of history's great figures, and for centuries he was known as St. Francis of Assisi. I doubt if that was his birth gift. Get it? I know Brenda gets it because she's heard part of this presentation before. He was a favorite of co-founder Bill W., so much so you can find his prayer in the 12 and 12 and in the pamphlet, The Co-Founders of AA. Some years ago, I recall past trustee Tom B. from Winnipeg, Canada, sharing with a group of us that during one of his General Service Board meetings in the mid-60s, a question was raised by a newly elected non-alcoholic Class A trustee. He had never heard of a major spiritual movement that did not use last names. Someone in the room then asked if anyone knew the full names of all 12 apostles. Of course, Tom said he thought he might know one, you know. Bill W. wrote the following in a letter in 1958. It's reprinted as Bill Sees It, The Rationalization of Anonymity Breaks. The anonymity breakers, quote, express the belief that our anonymity tradition is wrong and outdated, at least for them. They forget that during their drinking days, prestige and achievement of worldly ambitions were their principal aims. They do not realize that by breaking anonymity, they are unconsciously pursuing those old and perilous illusions once more. They forget that keeping of one's anonymity often means a sacrifice of one's desire for power, prestige, and money. They do not see that if these strivings became general in AA, the course of our whole history would be changed. That we would be sowing the seeds of a destruction, of our destruction as a society. I think those are words that we, as we celebrate this weekend and move forward, that we need to keep those ideas in mind. No matter what our experiences are in regard to the public media, as AA members, it's best that we should have some concept of the importance of anonymity and what it really means to Alcoholics Anonymous and how the general public views us. At my first meeting in AA, I was given a two-fold card with the steps and traditions. Most of us get one of those. But I was also given another two-fold card. Says, what does anonymity mean to me? And yet there are a few members in nearly every community who disregard the idea of anonymity at the public level. This is unfortunate. Some years ago in Minneapolis, a locally known sports figure was shouting on the rooftops in the press about his membership in AA and how he had finally changed his life. Our delegate at the time sent him a kind note about the importance of anonymity at the public media level. In so many words, he wrote back, mind your own business, I can do what I want. He did, and a few years later he died of alcoholism, and that made the press too. Then some of us like to brag about those who are perceived to be important people from the outside world. There are AA members among us. We tend to overreact when someone we think is famous attends our meetings. Like, you know, Bob walks in your meeting, everybody gets excited about it. Anyone with a drinking problem, regardless of their position or fame or fortune in private life, should be able to walk into the rooms of AA and be treated no differently than any other member. This allows them the opportunity to find sobriety the same way that we did at our first meeting. Moved by the spirit of anonymity at this very moment and during our 70th anniversary as a fellowship, we try to give up our natural desires for personal distinction as AA members, both among our fellow alcoholics and before the general public. As co-founder Bill said, we lay aside these very human aspirations. We believe that each of us takes part in the weaving of a protective mantle which covers our whole society, under which we grow and work in unity. Many of us, me included, have the inner need to be praised. To some degree, it's a part of those feelings that many alcoholics have of not being good enough, which can be disguised as seeking power and prestige. Lest we are reminded, as I quoted in Matthew 6, otherwise ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. In my own personal beliefs, I feel that heaven is right here on earth with you and the people around me. Even co-founder Bill had trouble with anonymity in the beginning. Later he corrected himself and said something to the effect, even I have no business breaking my own anonymity as an AA member. He set a great example for all of us when he declined to accept an honorary doctor's of law degree from Yale University. He would have loved to do that. But for us, he didn't. Dr. Bob said that if we are anonymous from each other, It's much the same as breaking our anonymity at the public level. The practical part of that idea is we need to not be afraid to give each other our full names and hope that it may be useful in helping others. So among ourselves, and when we communicate with our general service office or our intergroup office or our area services, we need to really spell out our full names so that when you get a response back, it doesn't come in as Joan G. Because that's a dead giveaway to your postman. But today, they're not going to know whether you belong to Narcotics Anonymous, AA, Gamblers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, but use your full name so communication can happen in the mail. A lot of people don't know that. Our AA business will always be and should remain that of helping drunks find Alcoholics Anonymous. We should never forget that anonymity is the one point of protection for newcomers who may seek us out. We are a fellowship of equals. The newcomers in the rooms of AA today is just as important as any old-timer. Now, that's repeated from what I'd said earlier, but I think it's worth repeating, because sometimes we forget. In Bill's last message, he made reference to the fact that our greatest blessing is the concept of anonymity. On the spiritual level, anonymity demands the greatest of discipline of which we are capable. On the practical level, anonymity has brought protection for the newcomer, respect and support for the world outside, and security from those of us who would use AA for sick and selfish purposes. 16 years ago, as the conference delegate for Southern Minnesota, I participated in the General Service Conference. The theme of that conference was anonymity living our traditions. Much of my sharing this morning comes from the sharing of the presentations I experienced during that conference. As an AA member who has watched our fellowship evolve over the past 35 years that I have remained sober and active, a concern I have, and maybe some of you may have, is simply this. As our society continues to grow, we need to teach our newer members, some of the older ones too, the value of our traditions and how they apply to help future members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I come in contact daily with men and women who have been in AA for vast periods of time. Many haven't any idea as to what it is they belong to or how the traditions can help them resolve group or personal problems. Yet the information is at their fingertips with our own AA literature published by AA World Services. Each AA member has a grave responsibility. That is to set aside our petty grievances as we attempt to set out to be a better example so we may become teachers to those who remain teachable. In AA Comes of Age, the chapter of the individual AA in society, past non-alcoholic chairperson Bernard Dish wrote about our third legacy of service. Quote, "But this third legacy of service has a string attached to it. The string is that we are granted the use of this legacy for our lifetime upon the condition that we not only look after it, but increase its spiritual content for generations that will follow us." That's what's happening here this weekend. Each succeeding generation, as it receives this legacy, must similarly protect it if they wish to employ it and gain life by it, and pass it on to the next generation with an enriched spiritual content. Enriched spiritual content. There's nothing more spiritual than anonymity when applied to our personal journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my experience I've seen many members leave the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because of a principle associated with anonymity. Either they could not accept a principle or that another member could not practice a principle. There was always a clash with a fellow member around a principle or a personality. If each of us can enrich the spiritual content of anonymity, we then discover the sixth gift. This sixth gift will create for future generations the attraction that leads men and women to stay here to begin their journey as sober citizens of the world, not just for one day, but for a lifetime of service to others. With continued diligence and a careful balance of principles, we will preserve Bill's dream for us. However, for Bill Wilson, it was more than a dream. It was his vision for our future survival as a fellowship. We today, during our 70th anniversary, are an extension of that vision, and we should be in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. Today I have an obligation to pass on the spirit of anonymity to others, and for that I am responsible. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Last night I had an interesting situation. We were walking from lunch or supper over to the stadium, and the fellow I was walking with, my friend Chris, he was saying how he was on one of the public transportation, and some people noticed that the people around here have been noticing our badges, and somebody came up to him and said, "Well, what's this all about?" And he said, "It's a convention." And the person said, "Well, what's it a convention about?" And Chris said, "You know, my first thought is I don't mind telling somebody, you know, on the street, you know, I'm in AA or anything like that." But he says, you know, then all of a sudden he thought, well, there's probably 50,000 other people that may not want me to do that. So something raced through his head, and he said what he did is he looked at his badge and he said, "It doesn't say." And they seemed to accept that. My next speaker is Mary.
That's great. My name is Mary T., and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 3rd, 1982, and my home group is the West Los Angeles 12-Step Study Group. Yeah. And as Chuck said, everything I say is my opinion. I did, however, pepper my presentation with my opinion also. The first thing I want to say to you is I have good news and I have some bad news. The good news is just by virtue of you sitting in a panel discussion on spirituality, you are probably more aware of our traditions than the vast majority of AA members. The bad news is, just by sitting in a panel presentation on anonymity, you are probably much more aware of our traditions than the vast majority of AA members. And a responsibility does come with that. I wondered why I was assigned this panel, and I thought maybe it was because I do come from Southern California Area 5, which takes up a large part of Los Angeles and includes communities like Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Malibu. There's a treatment facility in Malibu that I have read so much about in the press that I sometimes wonder if instead of insisting that their clients go through the steps before they get out, they insist they do a press conference to announce their sobriety before discharge. And all efforts of our local treatment facilities committees to talk to them have been to no avail. But you know, all towns, big and small, all places have celebrities. There are always politicians. Even weekly small-town papers have columnists. There's prominent citizens. There's the high school football coach. And our job, as Chuck said, is not to tell people who we see at meetings and not to ever talk to the media about their AA membership or ours. But as, you know, we often experience on this path, I had a coincidence that happened right before I got the letter asking me to come and be on this panel. I was volunteering at an AA information booth for a CPC committee at a convention of healthcare professionals. And toward the end of the day, I saw a photographer with a lot of equipment and his assistant come in. And I said to the woman sitting next to me, "Oh, there's the photographer. We want to make sure he doesn't take the picture of us in the booth with a big banner, Alcoholics Anonymous, above us." And she said, "Well, I think I would have cared back where I used to live, but really here, I don't care so much." And uncharacteristically, I did not launch into a lecture. I did not say, "You have the option to break your anonymity with your family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, but breaking the tradition is not an option." I just said, "Well, I don't think we want our picture taken." And the thing of it is what I realized is that this tradition isn't really just about celebrity. And sometimes I usually just think of it as, well, I'm not a celebrity, I'm a writer, but I know enough not to break anyone's anonymity. Actually, there is a writer in Southern California whose name is Mary T. It's not me. She has, she's written a book based on 12-step experience. She's done some newspaper articles that are somewhat negative to AA. So I just want to go on record as saying that is not, I'm not that Mary T. I do write, but I cover the local school board, so anonymity hasn't come up much, and neither has alcoholism. But what I realized from this experience of sitting with this AA member, just like me, in a booth doing some 12-step work, is that this principle really does have to do with every single one of us. Because all at times, all AA members represent Alcoholics Anonymous. We're certainly doing it here as we walk around with our badges. We go out on public information panels. We sit in booths at health information booths at health fairs. We go into hospitals. We go into institutions. And we really don't know when someone might want to take our picture. You know, even a high school PI panel, the local high school paper might want to cover it. And we really, sometimes hospitals want to take pictures when they're going for funding or institutions to do some publicity about the good that they're doing. So we really don't know when we're representing Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody actually might want to break this anonymity. We have to break our anonymity. We have to remember this is our tradition. It's not theirs. 5 years ago, at the International Convention in Minneapolis, there was a threatened hotel strike. And we got a little piece of paper that came in our kits that said, Attention Convention Registrants. This is a gentle reminder that we may want to remove our badges if there is media coverage of the current hotel strike outside our convention meeting facilities. This will be in keeping with our basic principle of preserving anonymity at the public level. We are responding to media requests for comments on the strike by adhering to our tradition of having no opinion on outside issues. But, you know, every time we have an international convention, there's stories in the local paper. Usually there's headlines about how the city's run out of coffee. But there have been articles this week. And we are walking around with our badges. And we need to be aware of what the media might, how they might be covering us. When we came into registration, my husband and I were going down the escalator, and I saw a guy with a professional camera shooting over the shoulder of one of the volunteers. Now, I don't believe that any of us are supposed to be the AA police. However, I did have this topic on my mind because I knew I was coming here this morning. And I rushed up to him and said, "What are you doing? Who are you with? What are you doing?" And he said, I'm not shooting faces at all. And actually, my husband watched the news that night to make sure there wasn't a story about the crazy woman who accosted the camera. If there was, we missed it, thank God. So, but, you know, our job is just to be aware and to teach others what we know about these principles. We teach our sponsees, sometimes our sponsors, members of our home group, and I'm really glad that Chuck mentioned the Dr. Bob quote about not remaining anonymous within the fellowship. I mean, how many times have we heard an announcement that someone from our home group is in the hospital and we try and go see them and we ask what room Big Red is in? And I really understand that newcomers are scared. I was scared, and our principle of anonymity helps make them feel safe in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And some members say their last names in meetings and some don't. I like it when people say their last names, but I am reminded by the anonymity statement that was read here today that when I'm speaking at a meeting that tapes, I probably shouldn't say my last name. And it never occurred to me in a small meeting where I live. Now, I see that our current delegate came in, and I'm really glad we were talking about what little gift from our area he could hand out at the conference this year. And we said, well, you know, we could have, like, baseball cards with all the celebrities we know of that come to meetings in our area. But perhaps that would be against the spirit of this panel. I had an experience a few years ago. I was fighting my own personal writer's block, and I wrote an article for our area newsletter, and I thought it was pretty good. I was really excited about it, and I couldn't wait for it to be published. And when it finally came out, I got a copy of it, and the article was there, but my name was left off. And in our newsletter, we pretty much usually tell the author of articles to give them either credit or blame or whatever, because it's their opinion. And I was really upset and was not very nice to the newsletter editor. In fact, I had to go back later and make a 10-step. I was really mad. And it turned out that my name was on the computer, but by a computer glitch, it had been left off the article. And I was telling my sister this story, and she very gently said, "Mary, if you want recognition, maybe you should look for it somewhere other than an anonymous organization." And I'm, you know, I'm also glad that Chuck mentioned the literature, because we have some really terrific literature. We have the pamphlet Understanding Anonymity, and this often gets sent when celebrities break their anonymity. And I have been involved in public information, and I served as the Panel 51 delegate for my area. And often when their anonymity breaks, and they go to New York, and then they go to the delegate, and sometimes the delegate handles it, or public information committee, whomever, to write them the gentle letter and to send them the pamphlet. And I have to tell you, every time a celebrity that I know or have heard comes to meetings, is on television, I hold my breath and hoping, one, that they don't break their anonymity. Two, if they do, that they live in New York or have bought a farm in Idaho, you know, so that we don't have to deal with it, because it happens a lot. And sometimes we never hear about them again. Sometimes we see spectacular stories of their drunken driving arrest and their jail photos. But that can happen, that, you know, that does happen to anyone. But if you want to hear more, know more about anonymity, I really recommend Understanding Anonymity as a pamphlet, the AA tradition and how it developed, and of course, the 11th and 12th traditions in the 12 and 12. And I want to close by the end of the tradition 11 in the 12 steps and 12 traditions. This tradition is a constant and practical reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. In it, each member becomes an active guardian of our fellowship. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank each and every one of you for becoming an active guardian.
Thank you, Mary. And it's interesting, your story about, you know, your name being left off. I, too, can have those difficulties with, you know, wanting to be out there in front of everybody. And when I was coming here to the International, I was told that I was going to chair this. I knew that my name would be in this program guide. But if you look at your program guide, it says that I'm from New York, but I'm really from Massachusetts. So I want to thank the printer, because I need help and I don't even know that I get help. And then one of the other things that Mary was talking about, too, is what I was taught is that I also have to respect your anonymity. And we don't have a whole lot of, you know, famous people coming to our meetings. But if they do, I shouldn't treat them as a famous person. I should treat them as a drunk. And I shouldn't just go up to them because they have some recognition outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what I've learned is that it's very, very difficult for people like that to get sober and to stay sober through the adulation that we give them. And it was a very important lesson for me to learn and to understand. And now the final speaker is Brookins.
Good morning. My name is Brookins Beck, and I'm an alcoholic. I don't look like an alcoholic, do I? I've never really seen one of us that looked like an alcoholic. Except, well, last year I went to the Georgia State three-page convention, and I saw this woman standing at the back of the room, and she looked like an alcoholic, and I went up and started talking to her and found out she was an Al-Anon. So. Y'all having fun yet? Ain't this great? This is my fourth one. I'm, in Next one's going to be in San Antonio, Texas. And the next one's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah. That's 2015. I've already got my wheelchair reserved. You can look at me and tell I've been somewhere a long time, can't you? My sobriety date is December 2nd, 1983. And I'm a member of the Baldwin County Group in Milledgeville, Georgia. The world-famous Baldwin County Group in Milledgeville, Georgia. Y'all all heard of Milledgeville?
Yeah.
For those that hadn't, it's the largest town of its size in the world. Okay. I think we have one of the best groups in Georgia. We try to stay in the solution instead of the problem. And when people start to get into problems, we try to lead them back to the steps. STEPS, acronym, solution to every problem in sobriety. It's in the book. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because it saved my life and saved my marriage and everything. And unfortunately, it don't save everybody. 2 years ago, come September the 2nd of this year, my 43-year-old son died of this disease. Had all kind of opportunities to get sober, been to treatment centers, halfway houses, jails, but he wouldn't do it. His refrain was, "It won't work for me." And I said, "No, Troy, you have to work for it." And he died. But the good news is that my other two children are now in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, Alcoholics. Chuck told you what the word anonymity means. I looked it up also, and I like the etymology of words, where they come from. Like the word enthusiasm. In means within, and theos means God. So enthusiasm is a God within, and I think every one of us in this room today has enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous, or we wouldn't be here. I have to look at my notes. You know, I got here through some bad breaks and misunderstandings. My wife had a bad character defect. She kept leaving home. And one time when she left, she told me I had to get some help. And I went to see a counselor, and he put me in treatment, and I hadn't had a drink since. I never planned on staying sober this long. I just want to get everything settled down like I had many times before, and I'd go back to drinking. But it didn't happen that way, and I'm so glad I stayed around. And I tell you, last night was awesome. That song last night, woo, brought tears to my eyes. But, you know, crying ain't all bad. You know, it has two benefits. If you cry, it's been proven that you wash away some of the chemicals that cause depression. And the second benefit, if you cry a lot, you don't pee as much, so... And both Mary and Chuck has alluded to what Dr. Bob said about anonymity. He said there's two ways to break our anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film, and not giving our full name in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe that's on page 264 of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And I always give my full name because it's hard, it's hard to look up somebody's last initial in the phone book if they say something you want to hear about. Y'all bear with me. When I came into the program, I was sponsored into service work. I came out of a treatment center, spent 30 days in there from December the 5th, 1983 to January the 5th, 1984. And I had a sponsor before I got back home. And I met my sponsor the first night I was back home at my first meeting outside that treatment center. And I started to talk to Mr. Ed, and he says, I want you to go to assembly in Macon. I don't know from assembly. I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I says, why? And he says, because I said so. You write that down, you got it. Look at it every day, because I said so. And I started going to assembly, and I've missed one assembly since May of 1984, and that was January of 1993, because I had had a double knee replacement and I couldn't walk. So I had a pretty good excuse for missing it. And I want to tell you how I really got into service work. We had an old fella in the, we had one group in Millersville at the time. We have five now. And Fred run everything. Fred had a steering committee. And he'd take his little few people and they'd go in the back room and they would decide what we were going to do. Well, I started going to other meetings in different places. And I'm thinking, this is not really the way you work this thing, I don't think. And so after about a year and a half, some of us got restless ears and discontented with Fred. And we decided we might want to start another group. So we sitting around one day, talking, drinking coffee. And we had been looking for a place to move to, rent. And this one fellow came up and said, why don't we buy that old church over there across town? It's vacant. Well, it sounded like a good idea to me. So we bought a church to hold our meetings in. And I went home that afternoon, and my wife says, what did you do today? I said, we bought a church. Well, we started this place called the Yana Club, You Are Never Alone Club. And we ran it for a long, long time. And so I was a traveling salesman. I went on a trip not long after we started this group over there. And they had a business meeting. My group had a business meeting. I got back to town, and I says, who did y'all elect GSR? They said, you. So what way you get to be a GSR is you get restless ears and discontented with your old group. You get together with some people, and you buy a church, and then you leave town on business. And they elect you to something. Well, I started going to assembly in Macon. And what caught my interest was the PICPC committee, the Public Information Incorporated with the Professional Community, the way of getting the message out to the still-suffering alcoholic through third person, through radio, television, newspapers. And I started working on the PICPC committee. And after a while, I was asked to be co-chair of that committee. And I co-chaired it for a couple of years, and I was the chairman for that committee. And we were always talking about how to get the message out to the still-suffering alcoholic. You know, this past June the 10th was a good opportunity for us to get the name of AA out into the public. June the 10th, as we all know, is the anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's when Dr. Bob had his last drink. So we went to the newspaper, which we have done a number of times in my town, and we asked them, would they write an article on Alcoholics Anonymous? And we explained our anonymity. We took the anonymity pamphlet with us. We told them we didn't want them to print our full names or pictures or anything like that. And could they do that? Which they had done before, but in these little towns that you live in, they change editors and reporters a lot. So you have to update these people on their anonymity. And they did. They wrote an article. And on June the 10th, in the Union Recorder in Millersville, Georgia, we're on the front page. Right here. They wrote a nice little article. They used our first name and last initial. Now, where I live, there is a lot of... I got two last names, Brookins. My last name is Beck. My mother was a Brookins. She married a Beck, and they named me Brookins Beck, okay? Well, there's a lot of Brookinses in that town, and there's a lot of Becks. So if I had used my first name, everybody would have known who it was. So I have another given name, which is Claude. So in this article, I'm Claude B., and the other guy is Bill R. We went up and talked to him, and they printed a nice article. This is just a way of getting the name of Alcoholics Anonymous out to the public. But there's going to be somebody here in Toronto, Canada tonight that's going to die from this disease that have never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's unnecessary. You know, I don't believe there's any unemployment in Alcoholics Anonymous. We just can't get the people to do the work that needs to be done. And if each one of us had a job that we could get out and carry the message, tell the people what we do and what we don't do. We're not a housing authority. We're not a bank. We're not medical people. What we do is we recover from the disease of alcoholism. And what better way to get the message out to the still suffering alcoholic except through the media? People that see these people first. Who sees the drunks first? The doctors, the lawyers, the judges. See, on Thursday night, I go into a prison in Millersville. Millersville used to be one of the largest insane asylums in the world. At one time, we had 15,000 patients in that town. And when Jimmy Carter became governor of Georgia, he broke it up into 7 regional hospitals. Well, that left a lot of buildings vacant out in this compound. Well, they put razor wire around them, and they call them prisons. We got 5 prisons in our town. Right now, only 2 of those prisons have outside sponsors. We just had another certification, and some other people are going to start going in some of the other prisons. In my district, we have 8 state prisons. And these people are in there probably because of crimes they committed while I was under the influence of drugs and alcohol. And we're locking them up, but we're not treating the cause. We're not treating what's wrong with us. What's wrong with them? And they tell me that the big book tells me that alcohol is only a symptom of what's wrong with me. It's not what's wrong with me, it's the way I think, feel, and believe. And that's what I try to get over to the prison. I do a big book study at a treatment center on a Wednesday night. It keeps me sober. You know, I tell every 12-step call I ever made has been successful. I stayed sober. And it keeps me humble. When I walk in that prison and sit down on Thursday night with those guys, and I tell them there's 2 kind of people in this world. There's the caught and uncaught, and I'm one of the uncaught. I'm doing some things that I could be sitting in that prison for. And by the grace of God, for some reason, I'm not there. So I try to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic, the third person, through our program of Alcoholics Anonymous, through the traditions. You know, we have 36 spiritual principles. We've got 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts. And I need all 36 spiritual principles in my program to have a complete program. I'm married to a black belt Al-Anon. And thank God, I can't get up and talk about this program without mentioning Al-Anon, because that Al-Anon saved our marriage and saved our lives. And she's over across the way at her Al-Anon thing. And I tell you one thing, she don't take any mess off this boy. Our 12th step, carry the message, is the basic service that the AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and the main reason for our existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society of alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither, and those who have not been given the truth may die. Some people who have been given the truth die. My son, he knew what to do, but he died. And I know that's unfortunate. You know, when Alcoholics Anonymous first started, we didn't have the traditions. We only had and we didn't have the book until April 1939. And, you know, if you read the history, some of the people in the Alcoholics Anonymous didn't want the book published. They wanted the word of mouth. But finally, they published the book in April 1939, and the word started getting out of there, out to the public. And the Cleveland Plain Dealer, I think is what it was called, something like that, wrote an article about a ball player from the Cleveland Indians called Raleigh Hemsley. And they got a few more people in. Well, then the article came out in, what was it? What's the magazine? Newsweek? Tallahassee Post. And the more people came in. And they said Publix is good. So when after Raleigh done his thing, then Bill started doing his thing. Bill went out and started giving interviews. And they called him Bill the Broker. And he started giving interviews and everything. And then other people got into this thing. And there was people wanted to, life insurance companies wanted the Alcoholics Anonymous name attached to it. There was liquor companies asked, if the Alcoholics Anonymous come and said, and drink, you know, responsibly. And all kinds of people were trying to attach the name to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, they saw where, if we kept on doing this, it was probably going to be ruined. That's when Bill started writing about traditions in 1946, and it was adopted at the Cleveland First International Convention in Cleveland in 1950. And Bill admitted he was the number one anonymity breaker for a long time. He liked that. It was mentioned that he turned down the award from Yale University, the doctorate degree. Like I said, he didn't want to do that. I'm sure he wanted to accept that, but he knew he couldn't. I don't know how many of y'all have ever been to Akron to Founders Day or been up to East Dorset, Vermont, to the grave site where Bill and Lois are buried. You won't find anything on their gravestones or their headstones about Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'll tell you one thing, in East Dorset, you can stand in the road and look up on this hillside where the cemetery is, and you can pick out Bill and Lois's grave because they are white. And the reason they're white is they've been rubbed so many times they don't have that aging of a lot of the tombstones has on them. And in Akron, at Dr. Bob's grave site, there's nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob told Bill, said, let's de-beard like normal people. Now, at the Wilson House, they got a big sign out front. And it's a bread and breakfast place if you ever want to go up East Orford and attend meetings. They have Al-Anon and AA meetings there. The principle of anonymity must remain our primary and enduring safeguard. It saves us from ourselves, from big shotism, prestige, and money. You know, when I was growing up, I played football, basketball, baseball, and ran track in high school. And I couldn't wait till Saturday morning to get the newspaper to look in there and see what I had done the night before. How I had made that touchdown, or made the last-minute basket in basketball. I loved to read my name in the paper. I had to have that validation. I had to have the credit. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't have to have the credit. The credit is staying sober one day at a time. And thank God that I finally got here and through some bad breaks and misunderstandings. And I love you people, and thank y'all for letting me share with you this morning.
Thanks, Brookings. As Brookings just mentioned, it's a tradition that helps to save me from me. And it's also been able to help me to have a spiritual growth. And I'm very, very thankful for those people that came before me and gave me those suggestions to help me do that, like, to be anonymous in what I do. Help somebody else out. Do something nice for somebody and don't tell anybody about it. And for a guy like me, that was a very, very difficult thing when I first got here, and sometimes it still is. So, it's lessons that we get to learn when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the history of it all is just really, really amazing to me. Now, it was suggested that I should talk a little bit about this whole thing, and you know what? I think that our presenters did just a wonderful job, and there's really no more that I can say. And what we'll do is we'll close early, and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer.